You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
New Hampshire shepherdesses love to listen to issues, etc.
Or what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
New parents love listening to issues, etc. In the middle of the night.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
More and more parents are seeing it as a solution to a problem that they didn't until recently realize existed. They have learned in the last several years that our public schools are, well, many of them are indoctrination centers, and whether or not they agree with what is being indoctrinated, they want to do it themselves as parents. There are people on the left, people on the right, and people in the middle who say, these are my children, and the public school doesn't get to undermine my parental authority. So what are they doing? They're saying, I'm going to take the education of my children into my own hands. Some of them are moving them to private schools, out of the public schools. Some of them are bringing them home to educate them. There's a Washington Post story titled, The Revolt of the Christian Homeschoolers. The Washington Post does not like the movement toward homeschooling. Joining us to talk about it, Joy Pullman. She's executive editor of The Federalist, author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled, Washington Post's Homeschooling Smears Won't Staunch Public School Hemorrhage. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
How would you summarize it? Why are so many parents pulling their children from public schools?
I think the real answer is that in the wake of the lockdowns and the forced online schooling of 2020 and following, many parents got a look at what exactly their kids were doing in school, and they really weren't pleased with the results. We've seen in the years following, you know, a mass exodus of people from public schools that really is not slowing down. You know, the people who left for full-time homeschooling seem to be largely staying there, and there's dramatic increases in Christian school enrollment as well. So it's a very, very big change that I don't think has finished having effects on society. And that's kind of frightening for people who are really invested in using public schools as a political tool and ultimately an anti-Christian tool.
What are some of the biggest myths that surround homeschooling?
Well, I mean, the number one I think that most people tend to get is what the socialization question. Basically, how will your kids have any friends or know how to relate to other people? That's one of the favorite ones that I love. I think, well, there's good socialization and bad socialization. And, you know, there's a lot of kids that I really don't want my children interacting with. So parents only just consider one side of the equation as if homeschoolers aren't having any social interaction at all, which is typically very false. Homeschoolers are very gregarious. They get out, they have art classes, they have music lessons, they join scouting organizations, they're in sports, you know, so they get out and about and actually tend to do many, many more hobbies and activities. Even research show this, but that's, of course, you can see that anecdotally. So they engage in community and in personal growth opportunities at almost double the rate of public school kids. So there's plenty of good socialization, positive socialization going on. But I think people also never talk about the fact that when you go to a public school, you are lumped in with anybody who happens to show up. And, you know, that may be fine for an adult who is able to handle a lot of kind of hostility and different ideas and has a really good developed sense of self. But we're talking about children here, you know, and you think that other people, I mean, literally let their children, you know, look at pornography or even things that are similarly damaging to the soul, but don't obviously look so hostile. Other people's kids are watching that on their screens all the time. That affects their souls and therefore their interactions with your kids. So there's both the positive socialization kind of going on, but also there's a very negative socialization that nobody talks about, forcing kids from decent homes to be in classrooms all day with kids from really indecent homes. And that absolutely does have an effect on the kids. That's one of the biggest myths, I think, that happens. And then, you know, there's some other ones. And I think that the Washington Post article is part of an effort that we're seeing to create another myth about homeschooling, which is that Christians who do it are somehow actually evil people who are repressive, harmful, kind of Handmaid's Tale sorts of people who beat women and children. Then that may sound like an extreme statement, because anyone who actually knows homeschoolers, most of us do know homeschoolers, they know that their families are nothing like that. But that's really a media myth that's really being perpetuated. And it's really strong in this particular article we're talking about, as well as just recently, Amazon came out with a so-called documentary on the Duggar family, a former reality show family with 19 kids on TLC, you know, and they were connected with some kind of fringe religious movements that, of course, that series is really playing up. So I think the effort really is to try to smear homeschooling based on just a couple of people in it who obviously have some major problems going on in their lives, but they're not representative of the whole. Just as school shooters, I would expect people wouldn't say it's fair to consider them as representative of the whole of everyone who attends a public school.
So tell us more about this recent story in the Washington Post that attempted to create a new myth, perpetuate some others.
So the Washington Post published this really, really large, I counted about 5,000 words in this article, and the reporter on it has been working on this article since 2021. So 2 years of obviously multiple interviews and really intensive resources devoted to it by this large media organization. And so the gist of the story really, I mean, it's as you read earlier, it's titled The Revolt of the Homeschoolers, but essentially there's only two homeschoolers in it that they can really depict as having revolted against their upbringing. And those homeschoolers are claimed to the paper, at least the husband of the couple that is profiled, you know, that they were physically abused as children, spanked with an object like a broom handle. So this couple, Aaron and Christina Beall, are the subjects of this large profile by the Post. And the article attempts to use their personal experiences to really try to paint every single homeschooler as repressive to women, abusive to children, beating children, they say, with hoses and tree branches. It's really an extreme kind of claim. And again, you know, this is the sort of just saying, you know, that again, two people who say they've had a negative experience with this, and then extending that to every single person who had a similar upbringing or education style, is something that would never be tolerated with many, many other things. So in my response to it, I give the example of Black Americans who are overall very, very supportive of spanking. But we will never see a Washington Post profile coming out there and saying that there's something wrong with Black America because there's higher levels of support for spanking among Black Americans. You know, that kind of like smear by association would never be done against that group of people. But it's okay to do that against homeschoolers, and it's okay to do that against Christians. I guess that's a major takeaway from the article. I mean, another one, just what the basic story is, that this couple, homeschool graduates, the wife went to Patrick Henry College, which started by some of the leaders in the homeschooling movement. Michael Ferris, you know, who started the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, was really important in starting that college. And look, I've had interactions with graduates from Patrick Henry. I work with one, and we hire interns from them. I have always found them to be really upstanding, some of the best people we've ever hired, high, high quality people. So I just wanted to say that on their behalf, because the article just smears them by association, because this woman, this mother of this couple, you know, went to that college, and she's not happy now about her homeschooling upbringing. And the implication is that therefore every institution they've ever interacted with is evil. And that's really just not only not fair, it's not at all supported by the article. So the entire story really is premised on the fact that these two homeschool graduates who live in the Northern Virginia area, they decided to reject their homeschooling upbringing, as well as the husband now rejects his Christianity. He's left the faith, and they put their children in public school, and their family's having a big argument about it. Basically, that's that whole story right there, an internal, obviously difficult family situation that the Washington Post decided obviously to use to exploit, to bash obviously some of its favorite antagonists, people that they love to go after, Christians and homeschoolers.
In general, how does it depict Christian belief?
It's a vicious article, I would say. You know, so for example, they publish actually a picture of something that Christina wrote when she was 15 years old. So she's of course, having been a 15-year-old girl, I know you know, I can put myself in her shoes and looking at this document, it's a list of what she's hoping to get out of a husband. For number one thing, of course, is that he's a strong Christian. She wants him to be a good leader of their family. And then she hopes for some other things, for example, such as musical ability so he can lead the family in worship at home. You know, it's obviously idealistic, but I, you know, think if, again, 15-year-old girls, they're idealistic, but also there's a beautiful kind of innocent bit of romance there, right? Where you really have ideals and you have high expectations from a man who's going to lead your family and that you are going to, you know, really sacrifice for and join yourself to in marriage. So, but that is put up as an example of essentially how repressed and oppressed that Christina is, rather than an example of her beautiful innocence that she's allowed to have because she's not going to public schools where literally, you know, this is very common. Young ladies of her age, younger than 15, they see their classmates naked, right? They're passing around pictures of essentially pornography of each other and of other people. If you look at, there's a number of exposés that have been done of high school culture now that talks about how, you know, the girls, it's just mass abuse, right? They're expected to essentially be prostitutes. So if you just contrast that, for example, with Christina's, of course, innocence, right? No man is going to be perfect. You can't expect quite as many ambitious things out of the typical young man that you're going to marry, although I think high standards are great. That is one example of something that is, you know, a Christian young woman would be taught to believe that shouldn't be ridicule, but rather should be seen as reflective of her being allowed to be innocent and protected from horrible wickedness, you know, that many, unfortunately, young women are subjected to in our crass society. So that was one thing that really stuck out to me, again, having been a 15-year-old girl, I bet I probably made a similar list. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I actually think it is a really beautiful reflection of the protection that you get within for women within Christianity, that they're able to have high expectations from a man, that women will be treated well and not subjected to essentially being treated as a prostitute in other grotesque ways. The article also holds up basic Christian beliefs for ridicule. Of course, there's the issue of spanking, which I mentioned earlier. And of course, everyone with a brain is aware that there is a big distinction between appropriate physical discipline and child abuse. But this article makes no such distinction. It quotes the Bible, the Bible's commands to parents to apply physical discipline to their children as an example of how the Bible itself endorses child abuse, which all of us Christians are aware that the Bible has many admonitions against wrath, you know, and exhorts parents to be careful not to incite their children to anger, et cetera, that would qualify the Bible's admonitions for proper discipline for children. But none of those are brought up in the Washington Post article because it's not actually concerned about thinking about what are the proper parameters for being a parent and using your authority in a loving manner and caring about your children's soul and using discipline as an effort to keep them away from wickedness that will destroy their souls and all of the rest of their, not only their lives here on earth, but for eternity. So instead of any sort of actual discussion about what would be the fact that parents sin against their children sin against their parents, the sort of thing we'd have in the Christian community, it's just a holding up of bits of Christian beliefs without any context or discussion of human nature or even the research that shows that parents who lovingly physically discipline their children have better lifelong ways that we're able to measure in social science. Those the kids do better in terms of staying married, having being happier, being more self-controlled, and et cetera, when their parents use spanking within a loving context and sparingly, as opposed to parents who obviously abuse their children or they abuse them by neglecting to discipline their children. So that's another thing, just basically saying that Christianity is evil because the Bible itself does tell parents that they do need to discipline their children when they are young out of respect and concern for their souls in a loving and appropriate manner. And then there's other things in the article that really shows just an intense hostility to Christianity besides the hostility to the Bible. It really kind of celebrates the fact that Aaron has lost his faith and walked away from it and from his family. It was a really difficult read for me to think of as a parent. You think, imagine if my children disagreed with my parenting decisions, and instead of coming to me and saying, look, I mean, I need to call you to repentance, mom or dad, or we need to talk about this, and having a Christian conversation about that. Instead, you know, they go to the Washington Post and air your family's dirty laundry to the world, which is a completely unchristian way of behaving. And so the article depicts it as a good thing that Aaron and Christina are walking away from their family and from their faith and basically trashing them to the entire world. Depicts it as a righteous sort of thing rather than as honestly a tragedy.
Is homeschooling a Christian phenomenon?
Well, you know, since the lockdown growth in homeschooling there, I think have been a large amount of new homeschoolers are less Christian. But traditionally, the majority of homeschoolers have been Christians who see homeschooling as their best option for bringing up their children, either because there are no Christian schools nearby or the Christian schools near to them are inaccessible because, you know, they feel like they can't afford it, or because, honestly, the Christian school really isn't very high quality and the family can do better at home. So, but historically, Christianity and homeschooling, you know, have been pretty closely intertwined. And I think that's because people who are aware of the hostility to Christians in public schools have to have some sort of way of educating their children. And, you know, the Christian school infrastructure is not what it used to be, unfortunately. So homeschooling is, for very, you know, many people, their only decent option.
So what do you think the goal of the article in the Washington Post was?
Well, I think it's very clear that the goal of this article, you know, really is to defame Christianity and to defame homeschoolers who are basically saying, look, it is incompatible with our faith to put our children in schools that are entirely hostile structurally and culturally to a Christian upbringing. And that is just the honest truth. So public schools are kind of intrinsically required to be anti-Christian now because of Supreme Court doctrines and, you know, federal regulations and other cultural sort of things going on where, for example, it's just a simple thing. You know, the Biden administration requires that schools have to integrate their bathrooms and allow boys into girls' bathrooms and showers, right? That's completely anti-Christian and hostile to a Christian upbringing for children. We can talk about whether adults can, you know, withstand that sort of private hostility, but it's very clearly an anti-Christian rule and it's imposed on children who are very easy to confuse and to abuse. So parents got a look at that over the lockdowns. And it's very clear that that sort of hostility has become much more open within the public school system in the wake of the lockdowns. There's been some sort of kind of apocalyptic revealing effect of everything that we have gone through since 2020 as a society. And one of the ways that it is hitting is in making public schools more openly hostile to Christians. And again, if you look at the history of American public education, Supreme Court decisions laying the groundwork for that, as well as many other things, you know, have been happening for decades, you know, I would say more than a century at this point. But the fruit of that is becoming much more evident today in things that should be just obvious, such as the bathroom issue. And you just have every day some new story. For example, there's one out of Massachusetts. Christians were put on leave for praying for LGBT kids because the implication was that LGBT kids, you know, there's something sinful about having that orientation. So basically, these teachers were punished for just being Christian teachers. And that's structurally the way that most public schools are set up to be. And it's very difficult to get out of that. And so Christian families who love Jesus and love their children realize that that is not a good environment to bring up their children in the faith, which they are commanded to do in Scripture. And again, as I said, you know, Christian schooling is, you know, in very many places inaccessible to people or not at a level that is, you know, available for families to use. So homeschooling is another one of their options. And so families are flinging to that because that's the best choice available to their kids to bring them up in a loving and Christian environment. And the goal of this article really is to tell them, you're bad people, you're bigots, you are child beaters. You will make your kids run away from you and hate you because of your choices that you're making right now. If you just look at that, that obviously seems to have a demonic effect there, because what it does is shame and vilify people for making choices that are obviously motivated by love and the best interests of their children.
We're getting Joy Pullman's response to a Washington Post story titled "The Revolt of the Christian Homeschoolers, You're Connected to Issues, Etc." I'm Todd Wilkin. The 67th Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod takes place this summer in Milwaukee. The latest issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine contains information about questions facing convention delegates, biographies of the five nominees for LCMS president, essayist themes, and more. Find out about subscribing to the Lutheran Witness at cph.org/witness or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Lutheran Witness Magazine. On the other side, Joy says that the Post article will not have its intended effect. We'll find out why next.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Luther Academy provides additional theological education for our mission partners around the world, specifically pastors who are asking for additional education but do not have the necessary resources in their own church bodies. By donating to Luther Academy today, you will be supplying food, housing, books, professors, and travel for Lutheran pastors who attend our conferences. To learn more about Luther Academy and how you can donate today, visit lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.
Have you heard the rumblings about the 68th Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? Well, it's coming up this summer in Milwaukee. In convention, LCMS delegates comprised of both laity and clergy gather for worship, study of God's Word, and to discuss and vote on the business of Synod. For a preview of what's coming up, pick up a copy of the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness, cph.org to subscribe to the magazine, or witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joy Pullman of The Federalist is our guest. We're talking about a Washington Post story titled The Revolt of the Christian Homeschoolers. Joy, you say that this Post piece is not going to have its intended effect. Why?
Well, one of the great things, again, about being in this media environment is I think the vast majority of Christians are aware that major media organizations like the Washington Post are not only not their friend, but are actively hostile to their beliefs. They work to steal, kill, and destroy, which is, of course, they're accusers of the brethren, right? What is that? You know, that's working on behalf of Satan. So, I mean, a lot of Christians are just, we have seen story after story after story like this come out of these organizations. And so they've really erased their credibility among, I would say, the majority of believers, especially in the United States and the West. And so because of that, every time, you know, one of these media organizations puts out an article attacking Christians for believing in the Bible, for respecting and putting into context its admonitions about how to raise children and how to love them properly. Well, we just see, you know, their attacks as evidence that we're going in the right direction, right? Because again, you know, Christ puts in the Bible also that, you know, if you follow me, you're going to be taking the same amount of incoming that Jesus Christ was given, right? He obviously didn't have an easy life. He was crucified. He was vilified for still centuries after. The things that he say are the subject of hatred and abuse. And he said, you know, that the same thing that happens to your shepherd is going to happen to the sheep, right? And so if you are my followers and this is what they did to me, you should expect them to do this to you. So I guess in a very small way, right? Because it's easy to brush off an article. You just can just completely ignore it and move on with your life. You know, but in a very small way, I think this article is evidence of what Christ promised will be coming at Christians in the Bible. So we shouldn't be surprised by it, but also we can see the persecution inherent in that, the hatred, the vilification, the smearing of Christians for doing the right thing as actually an affirmation that, you know, if the devil and his people hate us and are vilifying us to the world. Well, that's one of the marks of actually being a true Christian.
If the Washington Post were really concerned about child abuse, as it purports to be, what subjects would they be covering?
Right. And this is something I point out in the article, you know, and we have research to confirm people's experience that homeschoolers are not as a whole abusive people who hit their children with broom handles. And the research shows that at the very least, homeschoolers are no more likely to be abusive families than are parents who choose any other kind of education for their kids. But I just think that's kind of helpful anecdotal data. But I also think it's really important to notice that the Washington Post is blowing up, you know, what may or may not have happened in this one particular family that is not representative of certainly of all Christians or all homeschoolers. They're turning it into this whole smear piece that intends to tar all homeschoolers and Christians as child abusers. But, you know, the Washington Post completely ignores major, major stories that we know about and situations that are number one risks for child abuse. So, for example, the number one risk factor for a child to be abused in his home is if his mother is not married to the man that she is sleeping with. So broken marriages, never formed marriages, malformed marriages, the lack of creating, you know, marriages, that is the number one risk factor for child abuse. And that has been known for decades in the family studies literature. Very well known. It's pretty obvious and intuitive to anyone, again, who has any understanding of human nature. And the Washington Post is not doing major exposés of, for example, polyamory, which is one term for essentially shacking up. We don't have major 5,000-word, two-year reported profiles by the Washington Post about how, you know, the number one risk, most thing that will make a child most likely to be beaten in his home is if mommy is not married to the man that she's sleeping with. That's completely not there. Why? Because it doesn't attack the enemies of the Washington Post. And so they're not covering that, even though that is the major risk factor for child abuse. And there's a number of other kind of things that the Washington Post doesn't cover. For example, the open borders policies that we have in the United States now under the current presidential administration. Even the New York Times did a couple of weeks ago a profile about how that contributes to child slavery in the United States. Because criminal drug cartels are the ones who control the border when you don't have law and order from the duly elected authorities following the laws of their country, imposing that order on behalf of the vulnerable and weak. So when drug cartels control your border, they make millions, billions of dollars from selling human beings and selling access across the border. And the New York Times is reporting, you know, that the Biden federal departments, the ones who are supposed to supervise unaccompanied minors in the United States, have lost tens of thousands of those children. And the New York Times found some of them and they were slaves. They, you know, they're working under the table in construction, gardening, you know, other industries, and they are put into, you know, apartments by these people, and they are forced to work in order, in the money that they earn, you know, goes to their owners, the people who trafficked them. You know, so obviously that is major institutionalized child abuse. We do not have 2 years of exposés from the Washington Post about that. Instead, they are going after two people who, again, we have no idea if their allegations of, you know, abuse as children are true at all. But even if they were, they have no lasting physical consequences as a result of that. It would be in the article if one of them was handicapped as a result of the alleged abuse that's going on. We have that occurring systematically in the United States in many other situations, and there's no articles from the Washington Post about that. And it's because they do not care about child abuse. They're just using this alleged, you know, situation among this family to smear people who are trying to raise their children in the Christian faith.
What are the real data show us about children who are homeschooled? You mentioned socialization before, but in terms of academics and other measures?
Oh, I mean, across the board, kids who are taught by their parents, even if their parents have no bachelor's degree at all. So parents with a high school education, on average, do a markedly better job of educating their children than does the entire edifice of very expensive, highly credentialed government schools. Homeschooled children are more likely to get and stay married. They're happier as adults. Their psychological profiles are much better than the average public school child. Their academics are multiple points higher then again, and you can, and this is even after you adjust for things like family income, their race, you know, the usual sort of things that sociologists adjust for when they're looking at these sorts of studies. I mean, the on average homeschooled children, there's almost not an indicator that you can look at that on the whole homeschooled kids are not doing better on than their government school counterparts.
Given the hit piece in the Washington Post, how do you expect progressives to react to the increasing popularity of homeschooling and the ongoing exodus from public schools?
I expect to continue seeing, you know, articles, documentaries, things like this that attempt to tie in weak people's minds connections between simply reading your kids' books at home, doing math workbooks with them, taking them to their music lessons yourself. That's what homeschooling is. Tying that simple, basic, loving parenting behavior with evil, horrible things such as child abuse, such as, you know, abusing women, such as sexual abuse that unfortunately happened with the case of the Duggars. I would argue there's other things going on there. I'm not going to get into that. But I mean, I would expect to see continued and probably increased propaganda attacks on this mode of educating and raising their children, simply because the Washington Post article makes it very clear. They even make this quote themselves. They believe that when children are sent to public schools, that it increases the likelihood that they vote for Democrats. And I don't actually care about political parties, but it's more important what, at this stage, political parties stand for that is against the Christian faith. So a kid who goes to public school, and the Washington Post makes this very plain exactly in this article, is more likely to support abortion, so the killing of children in the womb. They're more likely to support all kinds of promiscuity, which, by the way, equals the abuse of all people involved, and other forms of just flatly anti-Christian behavior that destroys people's faith. And that's very apparent in this article, and the Washington Post considers it to be a good thing. They want to degrade children's connections to their families and to their church, and they see public schools as a way to do that. And so people who don't get with the program and obey the social pressure that institutions like the Washington Post help to create and enforce on people, they will be the subject of, you know, increasing vitriol from these institutions. I mean, the good news about that, however, is that these institutions really are not respected, and it's because they write garbage like this.
Are public schools beyond reform?
Well, I have very complex thoughts about that question because I don't actually believe in abandoning public and government institutions to people who hate Christians and who hate God and everything that He made. I do think it is good for parents to make sure that their children receive a Christian upbringing, which means that their education ought to be Christian, you know, in whatever form that takes. I strongly believe that, and I know that's a historic Lutheran belief because it's patently clear that however it shapes the children controls the future, and that what children are taught in their childhood absolutely affects their faith as an adult. And if we are Christians, we ought to care about children's souls, and that requires educating them in the faith starting from when they take their first breath. So I totally believe that Christians and churches have responsibilities to ensure that children have the chance and as much as possible are raised in Christian environments, which at this point is really not available through public schools. However, I also think that Christians, you know, after we ensure the care of our own children, the children in our churches, that we do have responsibilities as citizens of this country and as neighbors to people who also need to hear the gospel and who ought to be cared for under laws that actually are good for their souls and bless them and make for peace in our land. And public schools are a part of that. I do think that people shouldn't abandon efforts to make sure that public schools can't impose horrific ideas on children and to make them a better place for the kids who attempt to go there. So that, I guess that's one part of it, but I think there's multiple ways of kind of achieving that overall goal of getting more kids into better schools and better school options. So I kind of embrace an all of the above approach. I think everyone who is able should first look to their own and ensure they're following their vocation of father, mother, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, pastor, for the children directly in their care and under their supervision, and getting them a Christian education. And once that responsibility is fulfilled, I also think we have duties as citizens, as Christian citizens, to love our neighbors by advocating for and providing good environments for kids through whatever avenue we can make that possibly happen for more kids.
Joy Pullman is executive editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled Washington Post Homeschooling Smears Won't Staunch Public School Hemorrhage. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Joy, thanks.
Thank you.
Friday on Issues Etc., we'll discuss Christians and artificial intelligence with Pastor Trevor Sutton, and we'll respond to your email, talkback@issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, is looking for an English teacher with a master's degree for the 2023-24 school year. Edwardsville is 30 minutes from downtown St. Louis. The position would involve teaching upper-level, dual-credit English classes. For more information, send an email to Principal Jay Krause, J-A-Y-K-R-A-U-S-E, at melhs.org, jkrause@melhs.org.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.